Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to MUBI.com/filmstage.
Picture this, I'm a bag of dicks, put me to your lips, I am sick, I will punch a baby bear in his shit, give me lip, I'm gonna send you to the yard, get a stick, make a switch, I can end the conversation real quick. I am crack, I ain't lying, kick a lion in his crack, I'm the shit, I will fall off in your crib, take a shit, hit your mama on the booty, kick your dog, fuck your bitch, that boy dressed up like he's down on and took pictures with your kids. We the best,
we will. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a special episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today, the only person with me here today, locked in the cage, is Michael Snydell.
Hello, Brian.
This is why we have fight music playing, because we were supposed to record this yesterday, Sunday, but my computer just died, and it's back, who knows for how long. But anyway, because of the change of venue, Bill Graham was not able to come here and be with us, and he only told us 30 minutes before we recorded, so we didn't have time to get a guest, but it's okay, because
Jordan was sick as well.
Yeah, apparently something's going around the film stage, which is weird, because none of us live in the same state.
No.
But, yeah, we're here. We're here to fight. We have diametrically opposed opinions on Lady Bird, the newest film from writer-director Greta Gerwig, so we're going to fight it out. And that is why I was playing Nobody Speak by Run the Jewels.
And DJ Shadow. Don't forget, yeah. DJ Shadow.
How could we forget DJ Shadow? But yes, that is what we're doing today. Before we get into that, Twitter.com/
What was that? It's introducing the cage match?
Yeah. That's what we walked into. Like, we were walking down the ramps, high-fiving the fans, and I don't know. I don't watch wrestling. I don't know how a cage match goes.
Oh, well, my bad joke just really flopped there.
Yeah, that sucks. Anyway, so...
That's the name of his album, right?
Isn't it Mountain Will Fall?
No, it's or like his DJ Shadow's big album is called Introducing.
Oh, I see. Well, I am not
like edit this out because this is pretty bad now
this
that
is
I had
bad
to
radio.
Explain to you. Bill, save us.
Bill would be here just munching on some popcorn, just saving us all. But anyway, let's see. Twitter.com/filmstage show, Facebook.com, search for the Film Stage Show. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes, give us a comment and a rating. And, I might staple. We were actually able to get through the first 16 minutes of this whole podcast thing the first time that we tried yesterday. And we talked a little bit about the Ready Player One trailer, the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer, and Battle Angel Alita trailer. I think the basic rundown of our feelings were that none of them were very impressive, and at least two of them were downright depressing. Am I wrong about that? I feel like no one was a fan of most of those.
No, not really.
Yeah.
We riffed a bit, but it was bad riffing.
It was bad. It's always bad riffing. I don't know why anyone listens to this. Anyway, so... We're just going to leap over that and not discuss it. And instead, we're going to devote this whole episode to you and me fighting about Lady Bird. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. That you can become patrons for this show. For as little as $1 an episode, you get access to our super cool Slack channel where you will understand why we've been calling Bill nubile. Not nubile enough to avoid getting sick, unfortunately. But nubile enough to have seen Star Wars now. So maybe he is just the right amount of nubile.
What convenient sickness he had.
Yeah, oh, I'm only sick enough that I can't do anything after seeing Star Wars. For all we know, someone died and he's just weeping. I mean, someone died in Star Wars, not in his life. That would be sad. But anyway, you can also get entered into the raffles and stuff we do. So for as little as $1 an episode, you can get all that cool shit. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow, become a patron, and help us to produce this quality content. And, hey, if we make enough money, maybe I can get a new computer. which would be great. In addition, we are brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. Every day, Mubi introduces a new film, and you have 30 days to watch. So that means you have 30 films at your beck and call every day, constantly rotating, so that you have something cool to watch. We have a new film from Sion Sono, who directed Why Don't You Play in Hell, which we talked about on this podcast, lo, those many years ago. And that is a film called Anti-Porno. That is part of the, I can't remember the name now, the running like Roman porno experiment where the Katsu, the studio, is giving people money to make whatever they want as long as there's just a touch of sex in it. So,
and what are like the 14 movies Sono put out this year?
Yeah. And they also have, this is Spinal Tap coming out. So flip on your TV or your iPad or your iPhone or whatever you use to stream great movies. Hit up the Mubi app, which is beautiful. Turn your speakers up to 11 and get ready to enjoy one of the funniest films ever made. This is Spinal Tap. You can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. So do that, and that also helps to support us. But that's all. There's nothing now to keep us from buttonheads taking some just sweet-ass jabs at each other for our cinematic tastes.
No more small talk? Nothing?
Nope. Do you want to use a small talk? We got snow here over the weekend.
Yeah, there was some snow. All right, yeah, this sucks. All right, Lady Bird it is.
All right. Lady Bird, the newest film from writer-director Greta Gerwig. Her first solo directing outing. This film starring Saoirse Ronan, Laurie Metcalf, Lucas Hedges, and Tracy Letts, amongst a bevy of other artists. It is in theaters now. It is getting some awards consideration. Up until today, it had a perfect 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, but we've got it its first rotten review, and everyone was very upset about it.
It wasn't Brian either.
It wasn't. No one would let me review this film. Here is the trailer for Lady Bird.
I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
I want to go where culture is, like New York.
How in the world did I race such a
snob? Or at least Connecticut or New Hampshire, where writers live in the woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
Lady Bird, is that your given name?
Yeah.
Why is it in quotes?
I gave it to myself. It's given to me by me.
Lady Bird always says that she lives on the wrong side of the tracks.
All right, that is the trailer for Lady Bird. This movie has become something of a thing on this podcast insofar as I have been pretty vocal about the fact that I didn't really want to see it. It just didn't seem appealing to me. And whenever I would bring up how sometime like in September I'd hit a doldrums with movie watching, this would be one of the ones we talked about. But we did it. Or I did it, I should say. I went out, went to the movie theater, braved the snow and the cold, and went and saw Lady Bird. Yesterday, nobody knew what my thoughts on this film were. Michael Snydell, however, ever the busybody, went and checked out my Letterboxd. And now knows that I gave it on Letterboxd 2.5 stars, which would be 50% of the available star amount. I don't know how many you gave it, Michael.
3.5 out of 5.
That you responded to my rating with so much fire and anger.
Wait, Brian, let's be clear here. We didn't know it was going to be us two.
True.
I didn't know what I was going to go into. And I was almost ready to be vulnerable. I was going to be vulnerable on the podcast after being cynical and jaded and hating the movies that everybody else seems to adore.
Right.
But I learned better. I learned better. And now the wall is up.
Yeah. So much like,
and you're never getting in.
Much like our current political discourse, an extremity on one end has caused an extremity on the other end. So today, on the pro Lady Bird corner, we have Michael Snydell. And on the, I don't even know if I'm going to go anti Lady Bird. I may go apathetically Lady Bird corner. It's me. So let's do it. Let's talk about Lady Bird. Michael Snydell, why don't you kick us off with your thoughts on Lady Bird?
Sure. Let me put this up front. I'm going to be really tired of Lady Bird by the end of this year. this is a movie that it's good. It is good. It's kind of had a runaway successes with some of the critics groups. I don't have the information in front of me, but I know at least it was either New York or LA that picked it as their best picture. And it was, interestingly enough, kind of snubbed by the Golden Globes today, but you know, that means less than nothing.
Yeah, the Golden Globes.
But I mention that because this is a movie that,
well, when you say it was snubbed, I mean, according to the IMDb, it got a nomination for Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, Best Screenplay, Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role, and Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture.
No director, though.
No director.
It was all a sausage fest, including Ridley Scott, because, you know, the...
all the money in the world.
You know, it's just so many people have seen that, and just so much excitement about it, even though we didn't even know it.
Christopher Plummer got a Golden Globe nomination. That he started shooting that movie less than a month ago.
Okay. My point with all that preamble, though, is that this is a modest coming of age film that's done very well because of its perspective, because of its performances, and because of the specificity of its writing. I'm not going to say that it's not a major film or something, but I think at the same time, it is a film that I think there's a way to overblow it. And I think that now, having seen it about a week plus ago, it is a film I like. It will be a film that is near the bottom of my top 10, at least at this point. But it's also something that it feels a little bit like a debut to me. And it feels like a confident debut, and I'm really happy to see that Gerwig has a, in my opinion, I can tell that I'm going to be fought about this, has a great ear for the realities of, you know, angst and awkwardness in your teens, and a precociousness that is grounded by real emotional stakes between the characters. I think I noted on Twitter that, you know, there's about a dozen moments in this specific beats I could point to in this film that I could see a lot of coming of age films, or even just a lot of films about teenagers, would make a punchline. And this film does not do that. It makes a point to give most of these characters an interiority. And it should be said that, like, it's really great to see a coming of age film that's not at all about the romance. There are two men here who are played by Timothy Chalamet and Lucas Hedges here, who take up a part of the movie, but this is not in any way a traditional coming of age story about, you know, meeting that big crush in your life or anything like that. Instead, it's rather about, like, how everything's happening all at once in that last year of high school, and how time just starts feeling like slush. And soon enough, that senior year is, you know, you in your first day in college. You know, if you, and I understand that some people who are listening to this might not have gone to college, but I definitely found a specificity here. I, full disclosure, also had the regretful experience of going to Catholic school for about 12 years of my life. So this certainly had a lot of things that were recognizable to me. And performance-wise, I think Saoirse is very good, but I think Laurie Metcalf for me is the big performance here. I think my one, big qualm with this movie is I think that it is a little bit too tight. I think that it needs to ramble a little more. It's kind of the strange, it's set in Sacramento where, Greta Gerwig was actually grew up, and it's the strange California movie that doesn't, ramble or sprawl. And I think that there is some time, that could be given for, or excuse me, there could be a longer time given to some of these characters. And it's at times just a little bit safe for me. But I think despite that, I think that the way that it definitely handles a lot of the beats and, just tells a familiar story, but one with weight. In a way that even something like comparison of Edge of 17, which, to be fair, Brian also didn't like. What I was going to say is getting into spoiler territory. So I'll just wait. This is a game. I don't think it's a masterpiece. Let's put it that way.
Wait, can you say that one more time? You broke up a little bit.
Sure. This is a good movie, but I think that the level of praise that is being leveled at it will make it into something that it's not, even though it's important in the context of representation.
Yes. So this movie is not exactly what the trailer led me to believe it was. From the trailer, I got a very distinct sense of the kind of movie that this would be and the kind of character that Lady Bird would be, and it did not live down to those expectations. That is about where my positive thoughts end. Stepping out of this movie, I wanted to dash off a Slack message or a tweet that said something like, Lady Bird is exactly the kind of movie that would have close to 200 or something reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and still be at 100%. Because it's not risky or interesting or innovative or clever. It doesn't have a point of view. It doesn't have any real conflict. It doesn't have any nuance or emotional gray areas. It doesn't do anything that could cause anyone to find offense with it. It doesn't attempt anything that could fail hard enough for someone to really pinpoint it as a problem. It simply exists in like a liminal space wherein a person will be able to find at least 5 minutes worth of this film that could probably align somewhat with their own life, and that will make them believe that this movie understands them or something deeper about humanity in general. And that's pretty damning, if you ask me. It's not doing anything interesting. It's not coming to any conclusions. It's not saying anything important. It's not really pushing any envelopes. It's just a nice story that unspools over the course of a year and brings you to an ending that I think anyone could see coming from the first scene. Maybe the second scene if we're counting the car ride as a different scene from the bed making scene. I mean, one of my major issues with this movie upon walking out of it was just how interesting every character in this movie was except for Lady Bird. And just how much every time that one of these secondary or tertiary characters left the screen, I willed the camera to follow them. And Saoirse Ronan is an actress who I have had immense respect for since Atonement. She helped to bring one of my favorite books at the time to life. And then she was great in Hannah. And I mean, I don't hear enough people talking about Hannah day to day, honestly. She was a badass in that. She was amazing. And she has continued to be amazing and everything. And hopefully she will be amazing in On Chesil Beach, which is a movie coming out, I believe, next year. Also based on an Ian McEwan novel, as Atonement was. And it's funny because On Chesil Beach is another small story that's it's if you've ever read the book, anyone listening out there, you know, it's just about this couple on their wedding night and just all their anxiety and like their past together and their courtship. And it's not an interesting story, but it's two interesting characters. And Lady Bird is barely a character. She, as I was driving home, I found myself really disliking the short shrift that this movie gave to its central heroine, because she really just is like pinballing between every single cliche that someone who wants to do a high school drama about a young girl would decide to do. And she doesn't appear to have any agency. She doesn't appear to have any objectives. She doesn't want anything in particular that really pens her down as a human being. Because I didn't know a single person in high school who didn't, like, I had friends who were just like, I'm going to move to New York and become a sculptor. Great, that's never going to happen, but that's what's driving you right now. Like, that's why I have to come to your house and look at these stupid fucking things that you've carved out of clay and fired in your home oven. Like, but there's a person there. And, you know, you're writing shitty poetry, or you're trying to draw, and or you've got some loftier idea where you're like, I'm going to become the next great philosopher. We haven't had one of those in 2,000 years. You're not going to be the next one. But at least you're trying something, goddammit. But the entire point of this movie is that she's not trying at anything, and she has no goals, but she has this weird desire to get out of California, which is fine, except for the fact that she's, like, flying to all these pseudo-intellectual locales in her brain, but appears to have nothing to contribute. And she doesn't even believe that she ought to. It's like she believes that once she has removed herself from her environment, some sort of inspiration will fling to her. But even that is granting her more of an interior life than this movie gives to her. Everything that she does, everything that she says she wants to do, is really just a question of place, without any sense of what this young woman wants to become in her life outside of a part of a relationship with one of two boys that she sees. And they're apparently the first boys that she's ever had any romantic interest in. Her past is a mystery aside from the fact that she didn't try hard. Her future is a mystery aside from the fact that she's probably not going to try hard. So I don't know what I'm rooting for. I don't know what I'm hoping is going to happen to her. I guess I can hope that she's going to have a better relationship with her mother, but she's such a problem to her parents that at the end of the day, I like my favorite scenes in this movie were the scenes when people finally wrestled the goddamn interior spotlight that she had on herself away from herself and, like, you know, read her the riot act or took her to the woodshed or whatever cliched idiom you need to understand that, like, someone has basically just slapped her down and made her realize that there's something bigger going on. And it's funny because I'm having a lot of the same reactions to this movie that I did to Frances Ha, because Frances Ha was also about a shiftless young woman, not shiftless because that makes her sound like she's a jewel thief or something, but a directionless young woman. But at least Frances Ha wanted to be a dancer. And even though she hardly tried at it, she did continuously tell people that she wanted to be a dancer, so she at least had that half-formed idea of a character trait to guide her in some way. Even if she didn't have any ambition, even if she didn't have any real desire, even if she didn't even have any talent. when a character looked at her and said, what do you want to do? She was like, I want to be a modern dancer. And I was like, great. Okay. We have a basic point on a character compass to direct where this is going. And Lady Bird had nothing. She didn't even seem to want independence. And so what really annoys me is that you have this movie with this actress, and it's a great opportunity to give us the next great female heroine. And she's just not there. She's this vapor. She's this unknown that's just inhabiting the core of this thing. While meanwhile, all the people with the interesting struggles are being shunted out of her life. And some of them, I don't even understand why we were even given a glimpse into them if the movie's not going to follow them anywhere or tell us anything about them or make any judgments. Because, you know, a movie has a point of view. And it doesn't have to come to a judgment on all of its characters, but the movie's point of view should be reflected in what happens to them or how they respond to it, or even just how the camera is placed during those scenes. And very rarely does this movie do any of that. And so I find this movie to be a wasted opportunity. I gave it a 2.5 because I couldn't even get like angry enough at it. I'm getting angry now because I'm just like, I'm so apathetic and I just have to like get it out there. But it's hard to see this movie as being anything worth feeling any strong emotion over, unless your strong emotion is the anger or the fury or whatever intense driving force I'm feeling right now of why didn't you do more? And what even were you attempting to do in the first place? Michael, I don't know if you have any response to anything I just said. I should have looked at the clock. I don't know how long I just went on a rant for.
I went on a rant for a while too. All right.
But so, Brian, do you understand
just
what I'm saying?
Just me, like, and you. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, all right. You know, I guess the first thing I'd like to respond to is the idea that Lady Bird is not a character. I want to give you something because I do agree with you on one point, but I'm still going to I do think that this movie shouldn't necessarily be about Lady Bird. Her best friend, played by Beanie Feldstein, plays a character named Julie.
Mm-hmm.
I think she is almost there are a lot of different characters, as you're saying, that are defined by these more tangible objectives. You know, when you look at Beanie Feldstein, she's a singer. Yeah, she's a singer. That's right. Okay. Or you look at Lucas Hedges, who's good at theater, you know, or Timothy Chalamet, who's, you know, just a dirtbag philosopher.
He was Kyle. Yes. Never want to see that actor in another thing again.
Well, be excited for Call Me By Your Name.
Is he in that?
He's the lead.
Oh, fuck. All right.
So, okay. So here's – but I have to rebut what you're saying, that she doesn't have a personality. Now, I can see why you're saying that Lady Bird is comparable to Frances Ah. And, you know, Shiftless is actually how I describe both the Frances Ah character as well as this one. I mean,
I'm going to look up the definition of Shiftless just so that we're not accidentally calling them like something terrible. Just characterized by laziness, indolence, or lack of ambition. Yeah, all right, that works. They are Shiftless.
Okay. But that's not even... that's not necessarily right for Lady Bird. I don't agree that she doesn't have ambition, but I'm getting away from my point.
I think that directionless is, you know, they're unmoored. They're adrift.
Yeah, but directionless doesn't mean that they don't want a direction. And that's where I think the difference between what you're saying, a lack of direction and trying to find that direction and have it be a vapor, as you're saying. Like, I definitely identified this character in terms of waiting for this notion of where I wanted to go with my life, but also having this romantic idealism about the future, about this, you know, hazy ether where something great was going to happen. And in the case of Lady Bird, her primary characteristic is it's not even necessarily passion. It's a waywardness. It's a desire to do something, anything, but not necessarily have any idea what that is other than to escape from this town. And I mean, to be fair, I think that in some of what you were talking about in relation to the characters around her, like this movie is very clearly made to follow the point where, you know, that she realizes that escape is not really what she wants. And that escape is about, you know, something else. And so on one hand, I can see where you're coming from in seeing that this character as someone who isn't defined by tangibility in the way that a lot of coming of age characters are, you know, like for instance, one of the main tropes is, you know, characters who want to be writers, for instance. Mm-hmm. And there is none of that for Saoirse Ronan's character. Like her desire to go to the East Coast is literally based in a romantic desire that being on the East Coast makes you cultured, makes you distinguished. And like, while that's naive, there's something very real in that desire. And I think that speaking of specifically the romantic relationships, I think that her point of view is absolutely in how both of those relationships go. I mean, in terms of, am I getting into spoilers?
Yeah, we might have to go into spoilers for those, I guess.
All right, let's table that part for it. But
I guess, one of the things that I would say to, like, I don't know. Like, I understand what you're saying, that she, or like her lack of direction is something that she's hoping to correct by going to a place that she feels might grant her a direction. But she has no interests, you know, like the only thing we ever really see her reading is a bridal magazine.
Sure.
She doesn't know anything about music.
No.
We never see her indulging in any kind of movies or television. Like the only song that really affects her at all is a Dave Matthews Band song, which is, you know, and I guess this is kind of to the credit of the movie, is the fact that like someone mentions Jim Morrison and she has no idea who that is. Cause in a lesser film, she'd be the super cool chick who has the musical taste of like a 40-year-old man, you know?
I mean, yeah, I see what you just described as like an omnivorousness, but I think that there is something real to that, like the interest in being interesting. Like that is what she ultimately wants to be, you know, as she kind of skates through this year and she's hitting all of these things that are supposed to be big rituals and seeing that they're all kind of deflating experiences, you know, whether it's, I guess it would be the first boyfriend. Yeah, whether it's the first boyfriend or whether it's prom or, you know, or even, you know, you get a subversion of the usual scene where, you know, they're talking to the guidance counselor. And you know, we've seen so many fucking idealistic guidance counselor. And this one is like, wait, you thought you were going to get into where? Like there is something. There's something there, just as you're talking about that Jim Morrison thing, that is, you know, unflinchingly, like uncompromising about her normality and like how humdrum she is. And that doesn't, like, I think that still makes her a very interesting character, because she's not, you know, she's not like a burnout, you know, she's not a student, a scholar or anything. You know, I think there is something that is really identifiable there and goes against what you expect of coming of age movies. Cause then even you look at a lot of coming of age movies, and even when they try to, you know, do the bullshit, like delusional, this is just about a normal kid, it's still about these fantasies of, you know, whether it's the popular girl who, in the case of many of these male coming of age stories, the popular girl who finally notices the sensitive young kid, or this adventure that they're thrown into. And there's not really an adventure here, but this still feels like a movie that I wanted to spend time. Like, it didn't feel miserable, and it still gets across, like, sorry. And then the other thing I want to link that that sense of you know, that lack of tension and stuff is the fact that there is deep tension in her household. You know, her relationship with her mother is complicated. You know, it's defined by that idea that one moment, you know, they're screaming at each other, and the next, you know, she's things she look, you know, cute in, or the father, you know, who's going through his own issues. Like, I think the very fact that this movie is at once like about Lady Bird, but not really at all, is what kind of makes it special.
But I think that honestly makes it, as we've been talking about it, it makes it feel almost like a joke about, like, all these people in her life who have problems. And I will avoid saying what any of them are for now, but they are people that we don't usually see movies about, not, you know, movies that get this kind of release and this kind of acclaim. And yet the movie studiously avoids them unless they come into the orbit of this young, you know, middle class white girl who has no problems other than the fact that she, quote unquote, wants to have lived through something.
But she does have problems. She just doesn't recognize them as problems. I would say, given what's going on
in her, the other people in her life are going through.
Well, the other people in her life are, I mean, if you look at the other kids who go to the Catholic school, like, they don't have to worry about the things that, okay, we're skirting around spoilers here.
Yeah, I think maybe we should get into spoilers, because
yeah, I guess
we're at the point now where we've sort of talked around the margins of the themes and stuff, and
sure.
to really get our fight on, we're gonna have to start being able to spoil some shit. So Lady Bird
sounds good.
It's out now in a fairly wide-ish release. It's getting some awards love currently, and we'll probably continue to do so.
If you don't like Greta Gerwig, like, I don't know. I mean, I definitely see parts of this that are recognizably her.
Well, yeah. So we've both said that it trends, sure, a little close to Frances Ha territory.
I mean, I would say Mistress America as well, which she had a role in writing. I like it far more than Mistress America, but it is.
Wait, you like Mistress America more than Frances Ha?
Oh yeah, way more.
Gotcha. All right. Well, now we're going to get into spoilers. So if you don't want spoilers, get it. You know what? Actually, before we do that, even though I've already said it, so maybe people have already turned it off, I want to shout out Laurie Metcalf, because she does do a great job in this movie. And Tracy Letts is also great. And Lucas Hedges is also great. And I think I agreed with you when you said that Julie was very good. The actress who played Julie. What was her name?
Beanie Feldstein.
Yes, she was great.
She was quite good in Neighbors 2 last year as well.
All right. Shout out to Neighbors 2. Yes.
So remember that movie existed?
Sort of. All right. So let's move into spoilers now. So, what do I even want to say right now? You know, it's hard for you to tell me. It's hard for me to hear you tell me, because I don't know how difficult it was for you to speak the words. It's hard for me to hear you tell me that she has problems when everyone else around her is having more immediate and real problems, and when she could have lost, like, we don't know how this all shakes out, but she may have lost her family their house.
Yeah.
Like, she does a series of incredibly selfish things that have financially imperiled her family, put her mom and dad's marriage at risk. A father who we now know is at least currently on medication for depression.
Laid off.
Yeah, who got laid off. And it's just like, but like, what? And I'm supposed to feel something good about that just because at the end she calls herself Christine and tells her mom she loves her? Like, fucking millions of people come to that realization without imperiling the lives of everyone around them. My wife, when I told her about this movie, and I was like, because last week when we went and saw Three Billboards, you know, we've recently employed a local woman to be a babysitter, and she told us, oh, if you ever want to see a movie, you should just let me know. So we did that for Three Billboards. And then this week when I went and saw Lady Bird, my wife was like, I don't really have any desire to see that. And after it was over and I came home and told her about it, she said, when I saw that trailer, I saw a girl who acted like I did when I was that age, but without any of the bullshit in her life that was in my own life to make me act that way. And it made me at once embarrassed at myself and furious at the movie. And I feel like that's where I'm sort of coming from.
Let's put it out there. Like, this is very much coming from a white middle-class writer.
Yes.
And I don't know her social circumstances growing up. But there is something to be said for, I mean, even the fact that for this movie even to be about a character like this, it requires some level of wealth. Like, it's, you know, when you think about, when I think about other films that are about teens in this milieu, like, it is, as you're saying, the conflict is more immediate. The struggle is more immediate. And yes, I mean, looking at that, the kind of final scenes and the ways that, you know, her parents need to take out refinance their home. And I think what you're saying there is really important when you're talking about your wife, when she's saying that she recognizes that person. I mean, I think it's too easy to dismiss that selfishness and say that her being able to recognize herself as Christine, to dismiss that as an afterthought, I think.
But again, her recognition was couched behind the fact that, and I'm not about to get into my wife's childhood.
That's
her job at some point when she writes her memoir. But, you know, like, she had reasons, and I can guarantee, having seen this movie, that Christine does not have a fifth of the amount of reasons that my wife did to probably be only half as selfish and bitchy. And I don't mean that in a general way, but, like, there are moments in this movie where she really comes at people and, like, just acts very aggressive and mean. And, like, any conversation with her mother that goes on for too long, and her shouting match with her friend, like, there's not a lot of, she doesn't seem to earn that anger. And also, she never seems to recognize that she didn't earn it. And again, it felt super weird that you fill this movie with Beanie Feldstein, who is like accomplished at math and apparently is a very good singer, who, like, comes into her own and becomes the lead of a play and who harbors a crush on a teacher who she is mistaking his admiration for her intellect for actual affection, and who's got a pregnant wife, the teacher, not the girl, and also is struggling with weight. And you got her. And then you got Lucas Hedges, who is a Irish Catholic kid with like seven brothers who is in a Catholic school and who apparently has just realized that he's gay. And he has a breakdown, which is comparable to his work in Manchester by the Sea, honestly. And then you have Tracy Letts, who got laid off and is depressed and is trying to like be the arbiter between these two women, and who apparently feels a deep shame that his daughter doesn't want her, anyone and her school to ever see him. And then I can't find, is it Stephen Henderson who plays?
Yes.
Yeah. Stephen Henderson, who is the priest, only correct? Black person in this movie, who is a priest who breaks down in the middle of an acting session and then disappears so that there can be an interminable scene of comedy that then follows up with actor Stephen Henderson in a psychiatric hospital being talked to by Laurie Metcalf, who says he has no support system, and who then says, please don't tell your daughter, but it doesn't matter because she's not in the plays anymore, and we never see him again.
But that's the thing, Brian, though. Like, that's... That right there is entirely why I think this movie works, is that idea that all of these things are happening behind the scenes, and as a kid, you're not aware of it. That you do have those blinders, and of course you're with things that matter and don't matter and don't matter. That feels weird to say because I don't feel weird saying that. But I think that all of those conflicts that you're talking about, I think when we see all of it, yeah, it accumulates and it shows a selfishness and a relatability to that character. And I don't know. I guess, I mean, as you're saying that, I guess I was able to make enough of the distance between how Christine lives her life and what she thinks is going on and what these characters are actually going through. And I thought that divide was rich enough and interesting enough that I wasn't getting caught up in how her actions specifically affected these things. And I think that that final moment, you know, when she is expressing herself as Christine, is not only about the relationship with the mother, which is complicated, but is also about like recognizing your own failing to be a human in that moment and recognizing that everyone around you is a human and going through that. And I think that comes through, you know, through characters like Lucas Hedges, who you already said, you know, who after he comes out, you know, or excuse me, who after she finds him kissing another boy, the only thing he can do is come to her while she's working and just embrace her. And then I know you're not mentioning Timothy Chalamet, and Chalamet is supposed to be just terrible.
Yeah, because he's the only character who's less interesting than Lady Bird.
That is very intentional. Like, I see, this is weird. I found these absences like really moving in a way that you seem to interpret as emptiness. So
oh, yeah,
like 100%. Just speaking about Chalamet, for instance, I think that the way that he conducts himself is disgusting, but also identifiable. Like, you knew that cool guy, you know, who's reading, you know, books far beyond their time, he's cigarettes.
He's introduced reading Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States.
Sure.
And I was like, I know everything I need to know about you, Kyle.
And he just happens to not mention that he's already lost his virginity.
He literally says that he is also a virgin.
Yep.
And then when it's over, he doesn't even like try to keep up the pretense.
No.
He's just like, I never said that. He like tries to gaslight her.
Back to his book.
Yeah. And he, like, you know, I'm not, you know, we've all been there, but he lasts like 12 seconds and I don't know. It's fucking, what a shitty human being that guy is.
I mean, sure, but that doesn't make him not real. And I think that, again, goes back into the difference between perception and reality of what you expect of the people around you and who you think you're supposed to be in that moment. And adding that to specifically Christine is Christine wants to be everything, but doesn't have the skills for any of those things. You know, she tries to try out for with the play with a, you know, a brash version of Sondheim that's just terrible, that has a lot of energy but no talent whatsoever. And, you know, it's those things that I think do give her a point of view. That's why, you know, this movie in turn actually makes Edge of 17 a worse movie for
me. Oh, that is hilarious, because this movie makes me appreciate the shit out of Edge of 17.
Oh my God.
Because I was sitting there and I'm like, you know what sucks about this even more is that you can't even go to this movie as like a 17-year-old or 18-year-old girl and see your own life reflected in it, because it's 2002. And in the 15 years since this movie took place, the entire social landscape has altered fundamentally by the emergence of smartphones and the internet. And the Edge of 17 went after that and built it into the story in a fairly realistic way. And so, unfortunately, like, you can't even look at things of like cyberbullying or the dangers of texting and having a send button way too close to a delete button.
Yeah. Or the ability to see that someone started typing but then doesn't send anything.
Yeah. So this I don't know, this movie is just like like, I came back and I was like, The Edge of 17, like, went some places and, like, had some teeth to it. And this movie is just,
you
like...
You said just the opposite, Brian. Last year, you said just the opposite.
Yeah, I know. And then I saw Lady Bird, you know? It's like if you get bitten by a baby that has one tooth and you're like, well, that was fine. But then you get bit by a newborn who has no teeth and you're like, oh, even better. Suddenly, I have a lot more respect for that first baby who bit me. First of all, a hypothetical human being, why are you getting bit by babies so much? But second of all, you're suddenly going to realize that you were way too hard on that first baby, because some babies don't have any teeth.
I mean, I want to be fair to Edge of 17. I mean, Edge of 17 is about, like, self-loathing in a much more explicit way than this is.
Yes.
Like, I feel like in some way we're comparing them too closely. I mean, in terms of the things you already kind of spoke to, which is how much these periphery characters are fleshed out. You know, whether you're speaking again just about Stephen Henderson, who has one like excellent scene and then that heartbreaking, you know, scene in the hospital. Like, I don't know, Brad, like, I don't see those things that you're talking about as a failure. I see them as a method to view
the complexities
of all these characters' lives.
Because with Stephen Henderson, like, I think if the movie had narrowed down further. Like, if Stephen Henderson had just had that one scene where he cried, and then the students have that one scene where they talk about him rather glibly, and the way that, like, his son may or may not have died, then I think that would have been better than then having that scene where... Because, like, after Lady Bird drops out of theater, like, you follow Julie for half a second. Again, just so you can have that hilarious scene when the coach is speaking to them like they're football players, and then you have the scene with Stephen Henderson and Laurie Metcalf. But, like, what is the point of giving us all of that? Like, there is none, except to show us something that we already knew was going on, but with no narrative payoff. Like, if you're really trying to say that Lady Bird is both disinterested in and unaffected by the lives of everyone around her, then never leave her side. just keep giving us these glimpses so that instead of me saying, movie, please go back and see those other people that you were interested in for a second, I would be screaming at Lady Bird, which would at least have me interfacing in some way emotionally with this character.
But that was Frances Ha. Frances Ha was unbearably myopic. It never left his side, exactly as you're talking about. I think that this movie feels like a direct contradiction of that idea.
I don't know,
it's the idea of being able to see, you know, it's like the concept of, you know, watching someone through the window and you think one thing and then you see a glimpse of something pivotal in their life for each of these characters, and you realize that your assumptions are so much more shallow than the reality.
But I don't think that that is true at all, because every assumption that I made about these people turned out to be 100% correct up until the point that the movie then lost interest in them.
Can you be a little more specific then?
I knew that Lucas Hedges was gay the second that he didn't want to touch her boobs. And then, you know, when she caught him and then he just kind of disappeared and like, well, I guess they showed like them finishing out their play together. But I mean, like, you know, I'm like, oh, he's gay, and that's going to be a problem for him. And it was, and he was, and then there's nothing else. So the movie didn't have the opportunity
it's
to surprise me.
It's not that there's nothing else, though.
But the movie doesn't surprise me beyond then, because they don't have him, like, come out and everyone be fine with it. Or, you know, come out and he's disowned by his parents and suddenly he's living with another guy. Or, like, kill himself. Or literally anything. Because the movie doesn't have any interest in him as a character beyond just that shock, and then the emotional moment when they're talking behind the coffee shop. So there is no surprise. There is no inversion of or subversion. It's just, haha.
See, that's,
and now
that's
it's gone forever.
But that's where we fundamentally disagree. I think that if there was a scene where we saw him with a new boyfriend, or we had another scene where he's like, thanks for helping me come out, or something like that, that would felt... All right, I'm being glib there. But my point being that if there was some kind of further conclusion, that would have felt far more familiar than what this is. Because this is subversive in a way, because it's not actually about the romances with either of these guys. They're just flashes in her life, and they're people who she, you know, interacts on a daily basis, but they're also, you know, at once don't matter, but are going to be major memories years later. Like, that's what I think that got across with the editing and the visual language in a way that didn't feel like a bad writing to me. That felt like really good writing to me, and not decentering Christine by doing so. Because...
Please go on.
I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to add.
Well, I guess my issue with that is, again, just that Christine is such a non-entity that I don't know why the movie is focused on her. And again, it feels like it's a meta joke. It feels like this movie could be called, like, all these other characters are interesting, but we have to follow the young, pretty white person.
See, but I guess I did find her interesting. I did find her desire to find a place in the world interesting. I didn't see her as this automaton that you
but
did.
She doesn't seem to not fit in. She doesn't, like, it's not like she's gay and doesn't fit in. It's not like she's creating abstract art that no one understands, and she's like, if I could just get to a coastal city, someone would see this and realize I'm a genius. She just doesn't like where she's at.
No, but her personality is also a chameleon, in the sense that, like, she would drop Julie for, you know, the popular girl who, you know, who is close to Kyle. Like, that idea that she is, you know, feels like she needs to do all these things in her senior year, or whether that's, you know, that boyfriend and the college on the East Coast. Like, there are like expectations that she set for herself that, God damn it, I literally forgot my thought.
She doesn't feel like she's motivated by anything real. It's literally just like, I don't want to be in Sacramento. And sure. I just want to be in New York, or like, it's literally like that fucking line from the trailer is the entirety of her character, but without any real purpose. Like, you know, Ishmael in Moby Dick, you know, he's like, sometimes I get depressed and then I go to sea. And it's like, all right, well, I know that you do that because you're depressed. That's fine enough. You know, like the first paragraph of Moby Dick gives me enough to understand this character's motivation more so than anything in this movie does for Lady Bird, who's in 95% of the movie.
I feel like you don't like rudderless characters, Brian.
I fucking don't. And
like, people who are defined by rudderlessness.
People,
like, and I think there is a lot of nuance to find in that, and there are bad versions of it, and there are good versions of it. I think this is a decent version of that character.
I think
character.
This is a terrible version of that character. Because, again, like, she doesn't even seem to want to find a rudder. She just wants to go to another place and hope that someone gifts her a rudder. But that isn't someone striving for direction or meaning or purpose. It's someone who is intensely lazy. And
no, it's
this
not.
Is again, this is a problem that I had with Frances Ha, and people were fucking furious with me because of it. Because I said that Frances seemed like a useless human being, and I couldn't understand why anyone would want her in their lives.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Now, Christine Lady Bird McPherson is less so, because at least she doesn't seem to still be 12 years old. Because Frances Ha was like a 12-year-old whose parents never told her no. And Christine Lady Bird McPherson, and I don't know why I keep saying her full name, but she seems to be a person who one day maybe will come to some sort of decision and do something, but maybe not. This could be a prequel to Frances Ha. But it is funny that in both cases, both of these movies, the fucking revelation has something to do with just their goddamn name. In Frances Ha, it was, oh, she finally put her name on a mailbox. And in this one, it's, oh, she finally introduced herself as Christine and then called her mom and said the same thing. And I just like, that's not enough. You know, I'm fine with like a Don Draper-esque character who is just flailing existentially and doesn't know what he wants. And every time he gets it, he just feels upset and unhappy and therefore will never be happy and never have an actual goal that he can achieve that will make him feel as though he's found any happiness or meaning. But what I can't handle is a character who seems to want to simply be as though they were a jellyfish in a lake, not even an ocean, a lake where there are no currents to buffer it and move it. It's just aggravating to me. Waiting for someone to become a human being.
But that's what this is fucking about.
And that's why I don't like it. Because point, every single human being that I knew in my life had been where she's at by the end of this movie when they were like 13 fucking years old. And I just, you know, stunted people who finally get to a baseline of where they ought to have been at the beginning of the movie, they annoy me, they depress me, and I find nothing sympathetic about them. And again, she is not entirely that. She's maybe 75% of that. But it is enough that I just can't understand what there is to get or feel or think about this movie beyond all the other characters that the movie is almost like teasing you with its disinterest in.
But that's not laziness. Okay, so let's go back to your Don Draper example. You're talking about Don Draper flailing and looking for happiness, even as he, this is bizarre, but we'll do this.
Why did we choose?
All right.
For some reason, we keep bringing up Don Draper in the last couple episodes.
Someone who keeps rising in the ranks, keeps making all of these huge deals, and yet can't find anything close to happiness. Yes, that is a version of existential flailing. But another existential flailing is someone who feels totally lost, who is waiting for their chance to even, like, get into a place to fit into the world, who has a desire to be something but has no idea what that is.
But most of those people would try on those hats.
She is trying on those hats.
She tries on maybe two visors in this movie.
Why the fuck is it a visor, not a hat?
Because it doesn't cover her whole head.
Oh, god damn it.
It's not quite a whole hat.
All right.
You know, like, the play thing, I thought that was pretty cool until she just dropped it because suddenly she had the popular crowd. And so, like, but she never, again, just, like, just give me something. Give me something that she cares about.
That is something.
It's not, though. Something that you care about is something that hurts when you lose it, or that you have to struggle with a little bit. And so, like, obviously those two things don't matter to her.
Wait, what? Oh, the play? Is that what you're referring
yeah,
to?
Yeah, like, her time doing the play and her time with the popular kids, like, she doesn't hold on too tightly, and she lets go super lightly. And so what does she want? Like, what is the thing that keeps her going? Like, why does she get out of bed in the morning? She runs for student office just to say that she's done it.
Yeah. Because that's, like, another feather in her cap. Like, it's that idea of just wanting to experience without, like, distinction of why or what. Like, it's that checklist mentality. Like, even her going to the East Coast is something like, oh, she's heard this is cool, so this is what she would.
But I wonder where she even got that idea from, because she doesn't want to be a writer or an intellectual. She doesn't read. She doesn't seem to have deeper thoughts. She doesn't journal, even, you know?
Because so she doesn't read doesn't mean she doesn't have deeper thoughts. What the fuck does deeper thoughts mean?
I'm saying, like, she's not going out to try to, like, cultivate something within herself that would, like, make her fit in there. Like, she finally says something vaguely pseudo-intellectual about God and names towards the end of the movie, but, like, it's only to once again distance herself in a way from the new people she's found herself around.
And but she doesn't need to. She doesn't need to do anything important to be defined as a character.
She needs to, like, do something, though.
I understand your I understand your problem more in relation to the stakes affecting everyone around her more than her. I can understand that complaint, but I can't understand the idea that she isn't a character. Like, I can't get past that, and that's just so.
Because I really can't think of anything to define her as a character.
I keep saying it, Ryan.
What is it?
I just said it's her desire to be something, even
so
though
she's
she doesn't
Pinocchio.
Know what that is. No, fuck
Except
no.
Except Pinocchio had the good fortune to be a talking doll and was thus inherently interesting. I really don't understand, like, and this is one of those things, like, that I was talking about, like, you know,
it's a rudderless
Manchester by the Sea had a rudderless character, but guess what?
No,
spoiler
no.
alert for that fucking movie, he burned his house down and killed three children, so he gets
no,
a pass
fuck that.
For that.
Fuck that, like, that matters more than this.
Yes,
fuck
it
that.
Does. It 100%
no, it
does, because that means that he He has destroyed his life that he built up. Lady Bird has no life, and thus seems not interested in creating one.
She doesn't have no life,
and therefore,
that's not true.
Again, because she has nothing that she values.
No, but just because she doesn't go through some serious, like, crushing.
I'm not even saying that she needs to go through a crushing something. She needs to have something that she values, and she doesn't. What does she, tell me what she values in this movie. Tell me what would hurt for her to lose.
Going to school on the East Coast, her best friend, her family, which
her
this
best
is
friend
all
who
about
she abandons.
Yes, exactly. Because that's how it is when you're a fucking teenager.
I feel like that's true if you've only ever been raised on movies. Like, this film, this is another issue I had with it that we barely even had a chance to talk about, is just a series of cliches that are just coming a little faster and with a little less depth than they usually would. And now we have dead air.
I didn't think you were done there.
I could explain what they are, but like it really is just like, if I told you, hey, this is a movie about a high schooler, let's not even say a high school girl, what do you think it's about? Well, probably about, like, you know, finding and falling in love with someone, and that probably doesn't work out because you're in high school. Maybe at some point they'll be seduced away from their lifelong friend and be popular for like a couple days, and then something will happen with the popular kids, and the ruse will fall apart, and suddenly they'll have to go back to their other friend who they'll realize was their true friend all along. A couple of dances thrown in, probably a fight with their parents about something, you know, normal stuff. And then maybe they'll get into the college they want to do. And like, that's what happens.
Yep, you're right. You described the movie and no one ever needs to see it again. We know what is included, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, if only we had just said that up
all
front.
Right, no, I'm not going to end on that desultory note.
Good. I was about to not let you. I just, again, like, this is a very competent, workmanlike example of a lot of stuff that we've already seen. Anchored, if you can use that word,
delivered with a specificity that we don't often see.
I don't
delivered
think
from a perspective
specific.
Of someone. Oh my god!
What do you find to be specific about this? Honest question. I will be quiet for as long as you need to tell me what the specifics that you saw in it were.
Right. I already talked about this, and you don't see them as characteristics. You see them as a lack of characteristics.
No, that's what you were talking about. Yeah, we don't
yes,
have to do that again.
That is, yeah, exactly. Like,
I was hoping that you'd be like, because you went to Catholic school, so I was hoping you'd say something like, we used to break into the locker room and eat the crackers all the time.
No. Nothing that fun. The only time was someone almost lit their robe on fire. That was kind of fun.
Interesting.
I can't think of any really exciting. Catholic school fucking sucks.
I've had a couple friends who went to Catholic school, and they bounce between I hated it and I loved it, or I hated it then but I love it now. And so I don't even know. I don't know.
I don't think there's honestly a lot of good movies that get across Catholic school. Saved is okay at getting across what it's like being
with,
at Catholic
that was
school.
With Mandy Moore, right?
Yeah. One of the Culkins. Kieran, maybe?
Probably Kieran. Let's assume it was Kieran.
Or Macaulay? I don't know. Whatever.
Maybe it was Macaulay, because I feel like that was a comeback film for him. Sort of like Igby Goes Down, wasn't it?
It is Macaulay. Okay.
Oh, it's Macaulay Culkin. How about that?
Oh, and Patrick Fugit and Jenna Malone.
And Heather Maserato.
Yep. Before she was in a bunch of Saw movies.
Oh, and Martin Donovan.
Yeah. You know, Saved is a good movie.
Parker. We should watch Saved.
Oh, God damn it. Okay.
This is what I'm doing tonight. It's only an hour and a half long.
It's,
if we wrap this up in the next 10 minutes, I can be in bed by midnight. Not midnight, 10 o'clock.
It's been a while. All right.
So, but yeah, I, like, you know, I don't know. I didn't go to Catholic school. I was public school. Public school raised. Maybe public school, we forge harder, deeper, more long-lasting friendships. I just don't know. But, like, I don't know, man. It just seems... Like, I wish that she'd... I know that you're going to disagree with me. I wish that she'd wanted something. I wish that she'd wanted something and been denied it for some reason. Like, you know? I wish that she thought she was a writer and then at some point had to realize that she wasn't a writer. And then
sure.
That's when she became rudderless. You know, I wish that at some point they'd said, remember when you were 5 years old and you really loved soccer, but then you blew out your knee and we never let you play soccer again. And she could be like, yep. And I haven't loved anything since. And I'm still looking. But like, I don't even get a feeling of who she was like a year ago. Like by the time the movie opens, she's already decided that she will be Lady Bird.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about the oh god, I'm gonna agree with you about another thing. I think it only
took me an hour and 15 minutes, but I bludgeoned you into saying something that you agreed about.
I've done that like three times before. Fuck off.
I know.
this is interesting with two people. You know, I think that there is something to be said that while I disagree strongly about the idea that she doesn't have a personality, I think there is a lack of past here. You know, whether that comes through in conversations with her mom or with the rest of her family. And if I speak about something in her family that I do think is sticky and was overly broad was the brother. I don't think the brother was very well written.
We have, he is the product of a previous marriage, I suppose.
Or adopted? I'm not sure.
Not sure.
But yeah, either way, I thought that was an odd touch.
I've vacillated between respecting the kind of not mentioning it that they did, because if you're a family and like, if they grew up and they appear to only be like maybe 4 or 5 years apart. So if he was like sure. 5 or 6 and she was born, then it's just like your brother and sister, don't worry about it. And like, obviously if it's from a previous marriage, then, you know, maybe you don't want to talk about that with your current spouse, maybe, but something I just, so for a while I was like, I'm cool with this. And then she brought up the thing about him getting into college just because he was Hispanic. And I was like, okay, now you're not going to talk about it. Like you could fill me in a little.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only that brother, but there is an odd lack of, you know, a past that's filled in. You know, even how long she's known her best friend, for instance.
Yeah, like, we've been friends since elementary school.
But I guess, I mean, speaking to the word you just used, vacillation, like, I vacillated as well between finding that admirable and also finding it oddly, you know, vacuum sealed.
Well, yeah, like with any narrative, you know, if my favorite thing in anything I watch is, you know, as you know, brother, it's like, well, if I know it, then you don't have to tell me again. And also, why are you calling me by my relation to you? And it's and my dog.
Hello, it's your dog. Yeah. I didn't hear anything you just said because I just heard the dog.
Well, my favorite thing in any medium is when someone will say like, well, as you know, brother, and it's just like, okay, but like, if I know it, then you don't have to say it to me, and don't call me brother. No one ever does that. It's like, or when like two people be talking and like someone make a joke and they be like, aw, little sis, you're so crazy, and it's like, no one talks like that. So
it's more actually like you shithead.
Yeah. And then someone, you know, but what's funny is because, like, you know, someone could be, you could just have a character who doesn't know. It's like, why are you so mean to that person? It's like, oh, it's my brother and I hate him. Or that's just how we act to each other. Sure. Or like someone says, why are you so mean to your sister all the time? And it's like, because she's my fucking sister and I'm Italian. What do you expect from me? But yeah, I mean, so part of me is like, okay, cool. We're not going to have the scene where it's like, remember when we met in first grade and we promised that we'd be friends forever and we braided each other bracelets with that plastic hemp gimp stuff, and you know, we don't need that. That's fine. But there was like a weird kind of vacuum because I feel like we saw so much stuff happening that at some point someone would have brought up something.
I hesitate I hesitate to mention this because I think you're going to feel affirmed in some way, but I was listening to an interview with Greta on the Lincoln Center podcast, and she was talking about how at one point the draft for this back in 2015 was what did she say? Almost 300 pages.
Whoa.
And you know, like the interviewer like prodded a little bit, asking how it changed, and she just kind of joked that there were a lot more neighbors. And
okay,
so that kind of goes back a little bit to what you're saying, though, is that while I fiercely disagree with the idea that she doesn't have a personality, mm-hmm. I do think there is something intentional, but also something a little bit frustrating that a lot of the characters around her do often feel fleshed out with that sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Or
even just that sense of past, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, now that we've mentioned that, yeah, like every character seems to have a more evoked past than she does. Cause like, I closed the IMDb page cause I thought we were wrapping up. The rich girl that she becomes friends with, whose name is Janet or Gina.
She's pretty good, actually. Jenna.
Yeah, she's a fine actress, I suppose. I think that her character's a little bit, but it's interesting that she is totally at peace with being in Sacramento. And it kind of makes it seem like it's just because she's rich and doesn't have to worry about anything. But she's like, oh, I remember that neighborhood. That's where our starter house was, which is hilarious because it's the place that Lady Bird wants to live because she finds it to be like the most luxurious, wonderful place everywhere, anywhere. And then you have Kyle, whose father's dying of cancer. So you get a little bit of that. And then you have Lucas Hedges, who talks about all of his brothers and stuff. So I guess he really doesn't have that much of a past. But Julie talks about the relationship that her mother is having with this new guy and how her father left.
And we also briefly see her apartment, which seems to be very cramped, like gives a sense of that life in a very short shot.
Yes. It also lets you know that Lady Bird is not the least well-off person at her school.
Sure.
And then in addition to that, you have Stephen Henderson, who it turns out that before he was a priest, he may have had a son who died of a drug overdose or suicide. Or if you agree with that one bitch's mother, if you care that little about your life, what's the difference? And so there's a lot there that all these other characters are getting, but we never that I remember really get anything like that about Lady Bird, other than the fact that like she doesn't do anything in school, which is barely a past. I've been here for four years. How do I not know that there's a drama thing?
There is something very movie-like in her, you know, like self-mythologizing, you know, like her making jokes about being literally on the wrong side of the tracks and things like that. There is something like, you know, that there is like, you know, you're watching a movie.
And just like, again, like, I don't know what it is, but like her.
Damn you, Brian. Damn you.
This is why I just keep going. So her lack of like care for what she's putting her parents through, like really bugged me because like I have had numerous friends who've had varying levels of fraught relationships with their parents. I'm one of the only people I know who's like, even at my worst moments, I've still had what you would call a very functional relationship with my parents. Like there was never a point where like they were hoping that I get murdered or that they told me that I just needed to move out or like we only had one screaming match that I can recall. And, I only remember it because I had my retainer in and it was really hard to argue with them. I just remember the entire time sitting there, like we're having this shouting match about my math grades after we've moved to Texas.
And I just remember thinking,
I can't articulate my argument as well as I would like to because I've got this plastic thing in my mouth, but also I will ruin my argument if I pause to take it out and then have to get like a glass of water to throw it in.
Oh my God. That's pretty great. You need to put that in a novel.
in what would the male version of this movie be?
What do you mean?
It's Gentleman just... Hawk?
God. I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, when I write Gentleman Hawk, when I write the male version of this movie, I will have a scene where that someone's talking. It's like, so I got in another fight with my parents, and the worst part was that I had my retainer in. So that's what I thought you meant when you were talking about specificity. Like,
I'm curious,
dumb
then,
shit like that.
Just for the sake of this argument, because I am curious how you relate this when you're saying this is so familiar. What stories does this remind you of then?
Oh,
besides Francis Hawks, specifically teenage.
When I said familiar, when I was talking about familiar, like her and her relationship with her parents and the shouting matches and everything, I'm thinking of like five female friends of mine who I could name, but will not.
Sure.
And the worst part is that I was almost always in the house when it happened.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know how I kept pulling that short straw, but it just even then seemed like even when I heard those friends and their parents arguing, I don't think that they ever acted with such casual ruthlessness as Lady Bird does in this movie. Like, I don't know that they would have financially imperiled their parents to get away from them. And I just, like, some part of me, like, really sticks on that. Of, like, you know, I kept waiting for the moment when she would self-actualize and, like, really understand that, like, half of what her parents are going through has nothing to do with her, and she is only making things worse. And yet, she just kept making them worse. You know, she never, like, she finally at the end she makes that phone call and says that she loves her mom, but like she's still there at NYU. I guess it's NYU. I assume it's NYU. It's in the city.
Yeah, they never specify.
They didn't even show the words Columbia University on the envelope she got.
Nope.
So I wonder what that was about. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but like it just feels really weird. Because it's not like she ran away. I really thought the movie was going to end with her like not getting in, but then just leaving anyway. And just being like, I'm going to get a job as a waitress. I don't give a fuck. I just can't be here. But instead, she continues to leech off of them and cost them money and put them through hell so that she can go to NYU to question mark. And I'm just shocked that at some point her father didn't say to her, like, what are you going there for? No one ever asks her, like, what she's going to pursue for a major. And from my memories of applying to college, maybe 2 years after this movie takes place, it was a lot of that. You couldn't take three steps without someone asking you what your major was going to be.
Sure. There aren't enough of those conversations, for sure.
Yeah. I do. Okay, this is one good thing about the movie, though. When she gets the acceptance letter, it's a giant fucking envelope stuffed with brochures.
Yep.
Which is great, because you, like, I hate it when in a movie it's like, you've been accepted, and it's like, okay, but where the fuck is the rest of it? Like, I got accepted to, like, every college I went out for. I had to, like, this is like a brag, I guess. I got accepted to every college I went out for. And I just had like a 3 foot tall stack of shit that I had to wade through. You know, you don't get a cute little letter that's just like, congratulations. No.
Sure.
They get right down to trying to get their fucking money from you. But anyway.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just end it on talking about the dire financial situation we're all in because we went to higher education.
You know, I don't know if there's anything else I really want to say about that concept of it. You know, you keep bringing up your language of financially imperiling. I don't know. I think that obviously, even if her mom, you know, even says something like, you're, oh God, what does she say? you're not smart enough to get into school. I think that's what she says, point blank.
It was in the trailer. It was like, your grades aren't good enough. You're not smart enough to get in there.
Did you only watch the trailer, Brian? Did I just...
I'm sorry. I have mentioned so many things that weren't in the trailer.
I know. I'm messing. I thought I won there. I guess what I'd say there, though, is that, I think despite the fact that she's rudderless, I mean, I think that there is still enough in this film to show that she could go on to find herself. I mean, I don't think that she's a loser the way you are. And I think in framing it that way is in some ways a disservice to how the film is actually presented. I think I understand your projection. I understand your projection there because I know how much you dislike these characters. Or, this particular archetype. But I think that presenting it as this horrifying thing that she does to her family without consequences is like, I don't know. I think it, again, I guess it comes back to it being a naivete thing and a blinders thing when you're a kid where you're aware of what's going on, but not to the extent that you should be. And so, as you're saying, maybe that self-actualization period came for your friends a lot earlier, but I didn't find it unrealistic that it came for her when she got to college, even if it's a little convenient.
Yeah. It was fast when she got to college too. It was like immediate.
Wasn't it like 2 weeks? Isn't there like a, there's some type of,
I don't remember. Education. It might have been.
I like how she threw up on that guy too. And like, he's like making fun of her music. Come on. That was a good scene.
Okay. But that's the funny thing is like at that point, I was just glad that she was standing up for herself and like had, it still doesn't, that would be a good place to start. Let me put it that way.
You almost said something nice there. That was bad.
I don't want to say wasting my time. I really don't like having to go through a narrative just to get to the point that a person should be at the beginning of their arc in a normal story. You know, it's the same problem I had with the Maya Angelou book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. It's like, you go through this book and she's blaming everyone. And then at the end, she's like, oh, most of my problems are my fault. And I'm like, fucking finally. So can we start doing something about it? No, it's the last page of the book. It's over. And it's like, it's just the most frustrating. It's the least. I can't handle it. I just can't. I guess I just am a horrible person. I have no patience for that kind of nonsense. This is an insight into what I'm going to be as a father. Cause like, if at some point, my daughter comes up to me and says all this stuff, I'm going to be like, you're 13. You should have actualized by now. You should have figured this shit out. I am not going to let you be a ladybird. But yeah, when he says that your music sucks, it's all greatest hits. And she says, but they're the greatest. I'm like, you know what? That is an answer. It's funny. It's funny. And it's an answer. And like, I wish that she had just had that throughout the movie. Like, but the funny thing is that she already kind of had that moment with the popular kids when she talked about liking that fucking Dave Matthews Band song. My least favorite Dave Matthews Band song.
I have bad experiences with Dave Matthews almost. Yeah. So I was having some like PTSD flashbacks when that scene was going on.
Oh God.
To being in the shit.
Yeah. Man, you know what? But Ants Go Marching, I'd lay down my life for that song. Anyway.
Warehouse isn't bad.
Wait, which one?
Warehouse.
Which song is Warehouse?
Warehouse is a... we're not about to talk about Dave Matthews Band.
No, we're not. Yep. No, we're not. So...
It was a weird time in my life. I'll just recite the Fight Club. speech.
You found me at a very strange time in my life. Yeah, so that's it. I think that we've pretty much beaten this discussion into the ground. I'm sure that we could continue to battle on. But I mean, like, I'm glad that at least you have validated some of the things I've said, though obviously you read them in a different way.
Sure.
Yes.
I've already said this multiple times, Brian, but I just think every time we're going to deal with a film with a rudderless protagonist, it's going to be this dragged out fight.
I'm fine if you lost your rudder, you know? I just don't want to have to fucking hang out with a canoe for the whole fucking movie. And then finally someone chucks a paddle into them and they're like, oh, okay. Still not going to put this in the water, but at least I got it now.
All right. I can understand. I don't agree, but I'm understanding now why you don't like a number of movies and why you don't like Greta Gerwig's thing to an extent. And, you know,
which is, again, it's funny because I really liked her in Greenberg. I don't know. Anyway. It's over. We've talked about Lady Bird. We've fought about Lady Bird. We've come to a mutual understanding of each other's feelings on Lady Bird. It's over. Let me remind everyone that you can help us out in creating more quality content like this by going to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. For as little as $1 an episode, you can help us to do even more cool stuff. I know I usually talk a lot on these episodes, but since there's no bill, you and I each talked 15% more than we usually would, and thus we were getting a little punchy. And yet somehow we still managed to take this to over an hour and a half. Patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Check it out. It's pretty great. You can give us money. It'll be good. And movie.com. movie.com/filmstage. I'm losing it. movie.com/filmstage for a free 30-day trial of Mubi. It's a great time to check out Mubi, mainly because if you like it after your 30-day trial, or in the middle of your 30-day trial, I should say, you can walk up to whomever and say, guess what? I love this Mubi thing I've been looking at. My 30-day trial is about to expire. God, if only there were someone who needed to buy me a gift for the holiday season, I would tell them to get me a subscription to Mubi. And then you could wink at them or elbow them or like slap them in the face and maybe they'll do it. Maybe they'll get it for you. So check it out. Mubi.com/filmstage.
We need to have a conversation about how you ask for gifts.
I am not a subtle man. Michael Snydell, this isn't going to be the only thing that we are talking about one-on-one, you and I, because we are going to talk about Wolfenstein, the new Colossus, probably, I assume, some point in the coming week.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? We got nothing else going on. It's a video game. It's out on all major consoles, and I think also the PC, I assume. Who cares? Yeah. PC gamers suck. That's not a controversial opinion. So, yeah, Wolfenstein, the New Colossus, a game that Michael told me about that I'd wanted to check out. And I was like, you know what? Why not? And now that it's over, now that I've finished it, oh boy, do we need to have a conversation. So keep your eye on the feed. It's going to be the first time we've ever talked about just a straight up video game. And hey, if everyone likes it, maybe we'll do it some more.
Yeah. I'm good with that.
Cool. So that's all.
So Dave Matthews album reviews coming very soon.
Yeah. That'll be the next tier on our movie, or not our movie, on our Patreon thing. Is if you give us enough money, we'll start. We'll go Dave Matthews Band, Bush, Jake Johnson.
And Rush, apparently.
Yeah, obviously I've got to talk about Rush since I've seen them so many times. Oh, that was from last episode. No one knows what we're talking about. Maybe I'll staple that to the end of this. Stay tuned after the credits. Maybe I will put the opening that we recorded before my computer crashed yesterday. Anyway, that's it for today. Michael Snydell, why don't you tell the fine people at home where you can be found between now and the next time when we will be talking about Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
I forgot forgot about that.
I am super excited for that movie, not because of any like lingering love for Star Wars, but just because of one man, Rian Johnson. Anyway, why don't you tell the fine people where we can be found, where you can be found. Don't tell them where I can be found, stalker, between now and the next time.
Brian's address is... you can find me on Twitter at Snidell, on Letterboxd, where I've been doing capsule reviews of a bunch of the late screeners, the holiday screeners, and I wrote a review for a little movie called The Phantom Thread on the film stage. So check that out, even though most people probably won't be able to see it for a month. And yeah. I'm sorry that distribution's really stupid like that, but go ahead and read my review anyway.
And you know, you can read my review of the Justice League on thefilmstage.com. Go to my Letterboxd to figure out if I liked a movie or not before we record, Michael. And of course, follow me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan and all the other places. My personal site is dearfilm.net. And that is all for today. So ladies and gentlemen, join us next week when we watch the highly anticipated Rian Johnson follow-up to Looper, a little film called Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Top of the hill, the